Here's Andy Udman.
Genetically modified foods, the surveys show a lot of us are very, very nervous about them. How do you pick them out in the grocery store?
We can't find them in the grocery store because they're not labeled. Canadian government has decided that there will be no labeling on genetically engineered foods because they believe that consumers are too stupid to know the difference between GM and non-GM foods. They think that, you know, we'd be confused by the labeling, and therefore they don't allow for the labeling. And yet, when surveys have been done, it shows very clearly that the vast majority of Canadians want labeling for GM, because if there is labeling, then we wouldn't choose them.
Genetically modified foods, do they scare you, folks? We need to talk about it. It's Thursday morning. Pam Colleen is in. And you know what? Just before we get to that topic, I'll tell you, last time Pam was in, I couldn't believe it. We had the story about McDonald's pulling the yolks out of their Egg McMuffins.
Uh-huh.
It was kind of like, wow, thanks for the great timing just when Pam is in. We have another story this morning that broke literally this morning on CTV, and darn it, we're going to celebrate victories, because if you listen carefully to the two clips I'm about to play, what they're saying is, Pam was right. Pam was right. So to all of those people who right now are debating whether to turn the knob on the radio because they don't like Pam Colleen, I'm telling you one more time, Pam was right. Pam was right. I'm telling you again. Ryan, play the two clips about what Health Canada is now doing. Big story last night on CTV News. Let's hear it.
They're drugs designed to ease suffering, to calm anxiety, but they've also become the roots of a national crisis, triggering addictions, thefts, overdoses, even deaths.
My vision, and I think the vision of all everybody who is involved in this national strategy, is to have zero overdose deaths. That's unacceptable, that people are dying because of an overdose of a prescription drug that is supposed to help them instead of killing them.
Believe it or not, Pam, we have doctors, that was a doctor, saying we have a crisis in healthcare in Canada focused on prescription drugs, taking the wrong drugs, taking drugs that are harmful. We've done so many stories on this, and finally, we're getting some action.
That's right. That's why I wrote my last book. I said, we have a crisis on our hands, and people aren't talking about it. They're turning a blind eye to it because, of course, the word addiction and overdose, I mean, these are words that are blasphemous. We don't mention these words. There's too much shame and guilt associated with those words. But the reality is this tsunami that we have with addiction to prescription drugs is a huge burden on society today.
And big, big story. And we're going to get to it later in the hour. But our focus first this morning, genetically modified foods. I want to ask you a question right off the top. People have called me, emailed me, and said, I'm a little confused. What's the difference between genetically modified foods and genetically engineered foods?
Oh, they're synonymous terms. They're interchangeable. Genetic modification, genetic engineering, they're the same words, essentially.
Basically, scientists in a lab, researchers, usually working for major companies like Monsanto. Mm-hmm.
Looking to get patents and profit, essentially.
I've said it before. I say it again. One of the things I miss, as a kid, we used to have wheat. Crops of wheat. They were tall. The wheat was tall. It was golden. And I used to love the way the wind would blow through the wheat. You don't see that anymore. Wheat today doesn't look like wheat. Why is that?
Well, it's been hybridized. There is genetically engineered wheat. We'll confirm with our guest this morning, but I don't think genetically engineered wheat has been allowed on the market as yet. The effort that we're going to be talking about this morning is with regards to the genetically engineered alfalfa, which has huge implications in terms of the profit for the corporation and the basic backlash in terms of what happens to consumers and the animals who are going to be potentially eating this genetically engineered alfalfa.
Would you introduce Lucy?
Lucy Sherratt is the coordinator for the Canadian Biotechnology Action Network. It's CBAN out of Ottawa. And she's a real fireball in terms of opposing biotechnology here in Canada. Good morning, Lucy. How are you?
Hi, Pam.
Lucy, appreciate you joining us. Let's rock and roll on this issue of genetically modified foods, something you feel very strongly about.
Well, I work with 18 organizations who feel really strongly about genetically engineered, genetically modified foods and crops for all kinds of different reasons, yes.
Give us the hot spot in the world, because other places in the world are ahead of us on this one in terms of where they have taken action because they're alarmed.
Well, most countries, over 40 countries, have labeling of genetically engineered foods, and many countries European countries, for example, have not approved many of the genetically engineered foods that we eat because they choose to take a bit more time looking at the science. It's really Canada and the U.S. And South America where most genetically engineered crops are grown, and that's canola, soy, cotton, and sugar beet.
And tell me, Lucy, what kind of lobbying is going on from the biotechnology industry to convince the Canadian and American governments to be so loose on the regulation with regards to genetic engineering?
Well, that lobbying already happened 20 years ago, so the regulations are very loose, and that was decided before Canadians even knew what genetic engineering was. There was no public debate about this issue. So we see that 17 years after genetically engineered canola, the first GM crop, was introduced in Canada, we have genetically engineered alfalfa and an apple and genetically engineered salmon that the industry want to introduce, but nobody wants them, and that includes farmers. But the whole regulatory system is designed to not care what farmers or consumers have to say. It only rests on what corporations want and the question of, is it safe? Is it not safe? It doesn't matter if farmers don't want it. And that's why we have a conflict now about this issue in Canada.
Lucy, let me ask you this. Are genetically modified foods, by definition, bad?
By definition, genetically modified foods, the technology of genetic engineering is inherently risky. So there are risks, we would say, in the process of creating a genetically modified food. And then the question is, does our government assess that risk well enough? And we would say that they don't.
Well, we see the gray area with regards to prescription medications, Andy. We do this story all the time. I mean, regularly. Health Canada approves drugs that are dangerous, that are killing people. Now we have biotechnology out in the marketplace where they're not really looking at the science. Yet, Lucy, there is science to show that genetic engineering is risky. I mean, there was new science published out of France.
There is some new science. The problem is that there's very little independent science. We see that this French study is the first long-term study on genetically engineered corn. And Monsanto's studies are 90 days, and we're eating genetically engineered corn that's been tested for 90 days. But this French team of researchers tested the corn for 2 years and found chronic health impacts that are potential. So the real question is, are we even testing genetically engineered foods long enough?
What did they find in that study in France with respect to the genetically modified corn? What health risks?
Well, the study in France observed tumor growth in a majority of laboratory rats and kidney and liver damage. And that shows a possibility of chronic health impacts.
Now let's talk about what's coming up. There's a day of action, April the 9th. It's going to be here in London, Ontario. Why are you so passionate about this issue with regards to genetically engineered alfalfa?
Well, farmers in, well, across Canada have been really clear that genetically engineered alfalfa is not necessary. This is a herbicide-tolerant alfalfa from Monsanto. Alfalfa is used as pasture and hay. It's not just alfalfa sprouts. Alfalfa is actually really important for animals on the farm and also for the soil. So all kinds of farmers are really alarmed that soon the first perennial crop, alfalfa, could be genetically engineered. It's pollinated by insects. Contamination would happen fairly quickly. And the industry now wants to introduced genetically engineered alfalfa this year. And so the National Farmers Union of Ontario has called for a day of action on April the 9th, and people in London are responding. There are actually 12 actions happening across Ontario and at least 8 happening in other provinces to support Ontario's farmers.
Let me ask you about the farmers. I'm really intrigued that the farmers are really concerned about this genetically modified alfalfa. What is the farmers' concern?
There's two major concerns with genetically engineered alfalfa for farmers. One is that it will contaminate widely, and it would be really hard to remove alfalfa from your fields, and it puts in jeopardy all kinds of the purity of all kinds of foods that we eat, including milk, for example. that's a patented technology that will just end up in farmers' fields. But that's also important for farmers because no one really wants to use Roundup Ready alfalfa. Like any product, if it's introduced, some farmers will use it, but there's no real need for it. And so it sort of enhances the ridiculousness of this product and that there would be so many risks without really any benefit.
Now, the propaganda that comes out of the biotechnology industry claims that genetically engineered foods are going to reduce the use of agricultural sprays, that it's going to increase yield, help to feed the world. I mean, the more that these claims are scrutinized, the more we see that they're just not true.
Genetically engineered alfalfa is a really good example of how untrue those claims are, because this is a crop that's designed to be resistant to Monsanto's herbicide glyphosate. And already in Ontario, we see glyphosate-resistant weeds. So already farmers are having to readopt older, more toxic herbicides to try and get rid of these plants that were created partially because of, Roundup, this use of glyphosate. And now companies want to introduce a new Roundup Ready, glyphosate-resistant crop that will only accelerate the use of this pesticide and the problems of all of these herbicide-tolerant weeds. And that's a problem for farmers as well as for the environment and for our health. It means a cost for farmers.
Lucy, let me ask you this. I'm just trying to gauge, as we're discussing this, whether this is an issue that is going to resonate with the public. I mean, a lot of people in the city don't even know what alfalfa is. Do you sense that this is an issue that's catching on with the broader public? You've got these Days of Action coming up in just over a week or so, and there's going to be one here in London. But it takes a while to explain this issue to the average person.
It does, but we've seen actually an amazing response from the public. First of all, that farmers are asking for help. They're asking consumers to join with them to take action. So consumers are interested to hear that. We find that they're responsive and then take the time to listen, well, why are farmers concerned? Why do they need me to take action? And then once we start to explain actually how alfalfa is used to produce milk and meat, even vegetables, it's used to build the soil for grain farmers. So actually a lot of the foods that we eat are connected to the use of alfalfa on the farm. And if so many different family farmers are going to be affected by GM alfalfa, this is about seed contamination from one of the largest seed companies in the world, we're finding that the public is really concerned about those same issues as well.
Now, Lucy, there's been a history with genetically engineered crops, I think it was the corn, that was being fed to pigs, and that adversely affected the fertility of the pig. Now, what about the implications with regards to the alfalfa in terms of feeding it to animals?
We really don't know what, if any, impact there will be. There's a lot of anecdotal evidence, or farmers are saying that they're worried about the health impacts of some of these GM crops feeding to their livestock, the health of farm animals. But really with alfalfa, I think the first concern is just for the contamination that will be seen.
Well, especially, you know, you've got the honeybees. They're not fussy about what plants they pollinate, and they go and visit, and they go from one to the next to the next. Let me ask you this. You dropped a bit of a bombshell I want to come back to about the results of that study in France with respect to corn and the health effects. Can you just give us a snapshot of what the results are that are causing such alarm in Europe?
Well, the French study shows us that if you test laboratory rats past 90 days on a corn that Canadians are eating, those rats get sick. That's the essence of the study. And we've been eating that same genetically engineered corn for 10 years. Whether that means there's a real impact for us, we don't know. What we do know is Health Canada doesn't do any tests, and it has relied on a 90-day test from Monsanto that if this French study is valid, then that test is inadequate.
Lucy, if you could hold that thought, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we'll have just 2 or 3 minutes to wrap up and give people advice on where they can go to do some homework on this. We'll be back with Lucy Sherratt in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. Okay, so we have a day of action planned in London very soon. Pam, it's coming up in just a matter of days, in fact.
April the 9th. It's at noon, and it's going to be held at Ed Holder's office on at 390 Commissioners Road West, Unit 200. So it's April 9th, starting at noon sharp, and people are encouraged to bring signs as well.
Okay. Lucy Sherratt is a coordinator of the Canadian Biotechnology Action Network. Very concerned specifically. Lucy, give us the key reason for these days of action, which you're coordinating across the area.
Farmers are asking for help. They need to stop genetically engineered alfalfa from being released. Once it's released, no one can take it back.
What do you mean by released? I mean, you talk about contamination. What are the implications for the farmers?
Well, farmers won't be able to control what happens once genetically engineered alfalfa is released. And that is a patented plant that's just going to run rampant. And that's real trouble for dairy farmers, for livestock farmers who have pasture for their animals. They just don't want it in their fields.
Lucy, give us 30 seconds on Monsanto.
Monsanto is the largest seed company in the world. They own the traits that would be inside genetically engineered alfalfa. They have a lot of money to make from putting crops out into the environment. And, farmers aren't making money from this necessarily and find themselves in court against Monsanto.
Lucy, we have a day of action in London. It's not the only one.
No, there are 12 actions happening across Ontario, and then there are other actions happening outside to support. So there are lots of farmers and consumers getting onto the streets, and it's great that people in London have the opportunity to do the same.
Now, you have a website citing all of the different venues. Can you tell us the website as well?
Yeah, that's right. So the CBAN website, cban.ca/April9. So people can go and find out if there's actions happening in their other neighborhoods across Ontario. There's posters and information about alfalfa there as well.
If this happens, this genetically modified alfalfa, Lucy, what will be the result?
The result will be a lot of costs as farmers try and get this off their land, keep it off their land, and it's going to be really hard for family farmers across Ontario.
Vitor just sent me an email. He says, Andy, Monsanto will be the death of us all. Strong language?
Well, when it comes to the impact of GM alfalfa on the livelihoods of family farmers, it's pretty close to the truth.
Lucy, wish we had more time. So much appreciate you joining us. Lucy Sherratt, coordinator of this Day of Action and coordinator of the Canadian Biotechnology Action Network. Lucy, we thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lucy.
We should mention that right after the news update, Lucy was talking about a Day of Action. We have, Pam, we have a soldier for the cause right in downtown London, right, ironically, right in the food market, Covent
Garden.
Yeah,
she works at the Covent Garden Market at Homeopathy London at a health food store there. And her name is Mallory Neuster. I hope I have her name pronounced correctly.
And she'll be joining us right after this news update right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
A new national plan was announced today to confront Canada's growing addiction to prescription drugs. The abuse has become so alarming, it officially hit the tipping point today, bringing together government, health officials, and police.
They're drugs designed to ease suffering, to calm anxiety. But they've also become the roots of a national crisis, triggering addictions, thefts, overdoses, even deaths.
My vision, and I think the vision of all everybody who is involved in this national strategy, is to have zero overdose deaths. That's unacceptable, that people are dying because of an overdose of a prescription drug that is supposed to help them instead of killing them.
You see, Ryan, what I'm tempted to do, Ryan, is I'm tempted to do with Pam Colleen what Mike Stubbs with the London Knights.
What's that now?
Josh Anderson has scored for London. You know, Pam Colleen has scored for the Canadians who want to be healthy. Did you hear those clips, folks? From the CTV National News is what Pam Colleen has been saying all along. And I know I get a lot of flack for saying, well, what are you in awe of this woman? I am, quite frankly, because the stuff she keeps predicting just keeps coming true. And we're going to focus on this a little later in the half hour. But what you've been saying for so long, Pam, finally, last night, National News, Health Canada, very alarmed about our addiction to prescription drugs, which is causing our health care budgets.
Well, Health Canada proves over and over again that they're asleep at the wheel. You know, that they're pro-industry, that they're not looking at science that contradicts what industry is publishing. You heard what Lucy said. I mean, the science that's coming out of biotechnology is inadequate, and they're putting these products out on the marketplace without really considering consequences.
I don't do a very good Mike Stubbs, but I got to get Mike Stubbs to say, Pam Colleen has scored for the people of Canada. Okay, we just wanted to follow up on our discussion in the last half hour about genetically modified foods. Day of Action coming up on April the 9th, and we have one right here in London. I wonder if you would introduce Mallory.
Right. This morning we have Mallory, and I got your name wrong the last half hour, but it's Knooster. And she is actually spearheading this Day of Action on April the 9th at Ed Holder's office, in front of Ed Holder's office at 300 Commissioners Road West. Mallory, why are you so passionate about this subject?
Well, Pam, a couple years ago, as I began studying nutrition, my eyes were opened up to a lot of the issues going on in terms of genetically modified foods. And of course, its impact on health in the environment and for people. And so I kind of, you know, began a little bit of research efforts to look further into the issues. And in doing so, I was connected with great websites like the Canadian Biotechnology Action Network, as well as some other genetically modified research. And my concerns, started to grow around the issues.
Mallory, I want to ask you a question, and I promise I'll keep the answer just to myself. Or maybe I'll share it with Pam. You work in the Covent Garden Market.
I do, yes.
That's where you go to get good food in London. Is there any genetically modified food in your building?
I believe there's contamination with genetically modified foods in all of those places. So, yes, I think that there is. In some of the packaged and processed foods, unfortunately, because there is no effort to label those sort of things, they do tend to sneak their way in.
Now, Whole Foods has a policy that they're implementing, I think, as of now, aren't they, that they're labeling GM or something along that line?
Yes, I believe. I couldn't remember if it was the next 5 or 8 years, but mm-hmm. they do have a plan to become completely GM-free. So it's something I've been reading a little bit about, how they're going to implement this or how long it will take. I'm not entirely sure, but I will be following that issue.
Mallory, I want to ask you the question that I asked Lucy in the last half hour.
Okay.
Is genetically modified or genetically engineered food, by definition, bad, unhealthy?
Well, that's a tough question to answer. I guess it depends on who you're asking it to. In my personal opinion, I do not support it. I do think it is potentially bad, mostly so because of the lack of research that goes into these sort of things and the potential environmental contamination, as long as the health risks it poses to consumers who consume these foods.
We're like canaries in the coal mine, aren't we? I mean, they're putting this stuff out on the marketplace, and they're saying, well, let's just see what happens to humans after they've been eating these foods for 10, 20, 30, 40 or more years.
Exactly, and it's very upsetting to me, like, coming from like a psychology background where you're reading numerous research studies that are mandatory before, you know, things come into effect, and you kind of see the lack thereof in these issues, and it's very, very, it can be very devastating to the environment. We really have no information on what could potentially happen, and that is bothersome to me.
Mallory, I just want to remind our listeners that our lines are always open, 643-1290. We have this day of protest coming up on April the 9th. Mallory, what tell us about the day and what you're planning to do, and why Ed Holder's office?
Well, basically, I've been coordinating, for a while now with Lucy from CBAN. We discuss things often on the genetically modified front, and she informed me of this day of action, so I offered my help. So along with her and members of the NFU, we have decided to arrange this day of action in collaboration with others that are taking part across Ontario. So I offered basically my assistance in spearheading the event. And basically what we're doing is we're going to be hosting the rally outside of Ed's office on April 9th from 12 to 1 p.m., in which I will be presenting a petition about genetically modified alfalfa. I've been collecting signatures in the community with the help of certain farmers and retailers. So we hope to kind of have that as a focus point of the rally. And
I want to ask you right after we talk to Ray to just give us 1 minute on what your message, if you could have a Timmy's with Ed Holder, and you had to say it in 1 minute, what you'd want to say to him. But Ray, you have a comment. Go ahead.
Yes.
Hey, Andy, your old buddy Ray here, trucking soybeans.
My farmer.
Have you read the article by Mark Linus? He's the guy who started the anti-GMO paranoia in Europe and has, I think in January, recanted everything and admitted that he made a huge mistake and is now very pro-GMO.
I think you should look at the rebuttals against his pro-GMO stance, though. There are rebuttals to him.
Always going to be rebuttals, but there seems like a lot of them are just bleeding hearts.
Well, the thing is that the biotechnology industry has been promising us that this is going to reduce the use of agricultural sprays. It's also promising that it's going to increase yields. It's going to help to feed the world. And when this research is looked at very carefully, we're finding out that this is just not true.
Pam, well, I have my buddy Ray from Listowel, the farmer friend from Listowel, on the line. Well, that's why I found it curious. Are you still there, Ray? Okay, we've lost Ray, unfortunately. Because what was curious to me about, why don't I throw this question to Mallory, this day of action actually is prompted by the farmers.
Yes, it is. And I think that highlights some of the things that Lucy and Pam have been bringing up, how concerned they are and how this is going to impact, their crops, the health of their animals, their ability to deal with weeds and other cross contamination issues.
Pam, I've been telling you that some of my farmer friends, and Ray is right near the top of the list, they're very concerned that I've gone over to the dark side on on this issue. And yet you're saying, and I want to make this very clear, the farmers are behind this day of action.
That's right. The farmers don't want to be beholden to industry, to the corporations. I mean, there are so many costs associated with the biotechnology industry, and farmers have to incur the cost. I mean, we've seen in India recently where I think it's over 100,000 farmers have committed suicide because they were using the genetically engineered cotton, and a lot of them lost their crops and they couldn't pay back their loans, and then they ended up committing suicide. Over 100,000 farmers in India.
Unbelievable. I read about that story, and I'm looking at the list of countries in Europe that have are very, very concerned and are blocking some of the efforts of Monsanto. We got Poland, Austria. Poland's the latest. Poland, Austria, France, Germany, Hungary, Luxembourg, Greece, Bulgaria, and Russia all putting a stop to genetically modified foods until they have a chance to do more research. So, Mallory, we're almost out of time. You're speaking to us from the Covent Garden Market. Let me ask you about this day of action. Again, it's at Ed Holder's office on April the 9th. And here's the question. If Ed Holder said, Mallory, I've only got a minute. You and me will grab a coffee. Give me in 1 minute what your message is.
Well, it's hard to sum up in a minute. I could talk for hours. But I would basically, present my concerns to Ed Holder in regards to the potential contamination from GM alfalfa, the risks it poses for farmers, the environment, and the health of any consumers, as well as the organic industry. I would ask for him to present the petition that I'm providing to him to the House of Commons so that it can, signify the collective concern of many people in Ontario, and I'm sure easily across Canada, in regards to the issues about genetically modified alfalfa, the lack thereof, the research.
Thinking about my friend Ray and other farmer friends. Let me ask you about the big sticker we see everywhere, Farmers Feed Cities. The question is, the food that they're giving us, is it still healthy? The food that we see in the Covent Garden Market, is it still healthy? Or do we have growing cause for alarm?
In my opinion, it is still healthy, and it's one of those things to really be cherished and treated with care and supported. You see a growing movement of people supporting local food growers, and I think this should continue because it will maintain a strong stance against corporations that try to monopolize the seed industry. So I think that the food is 100% healthy, and I think it should be supported and enjoyed every day.
Yeah, yep. Consumers need to protect their food supply. Now, Mallory, again, the date is April the 9th. You need lots of bodies out there in protest to the alfalfa. Can you tell us an email that people could use to contact for more information?
Yes. If anyone's interested in more information on the event, they can contact myself, Mallory. The email I've set up is stopgmalfalfa@gmail.com. It's all one word. They can email me at any point in time, or they can show up at the rally, bring their homemade banners or signs, bring friends and family, and come support us that way. If they can't attend the rally, they can certainly spread word throughout the community, or also go to the CBAN website and download the alfalfa petition to either provide to myself or Ed at a different point in time.
And that website is just cban.ca.
Yes, that's correct.
Terrific. Mallory, we're out of time. We thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. I appreciate it, and I hope people can come out and support this very important event.
Thank you, Mallory.
Terrific. Okay, short break. When we come back, we're going to celebrate Pam Killeen's home run. She's been warning about this for years, and then last night, I just burst out laughing because there it was on CTV as if Pam had written the script. We have a crisis, an absolute crisis in this country when it comes to prescription drugs. We'll talk about that. Take your calls in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
A new national plan was announced today to confront Canada's growing addiction to prescription drugs. The abuse has become so alarming, it officially hit the tipping point today, bringing together government, health officials, and police.
They're drugs designed to ease suffering, to calm anxiety, but they've also become the roots of a national crisis, triggering addictions, thefts, overdoses, even deaths.
My vision, and I think the vision of all everybody who is involved in this national strategy, is to have zero overdose deaths. That's unacceptable, that people are dying because of an overdose of a prescription drug that is supposed to help them instead of killing them.
Pam, you've been saying it all along. What is the state of health in this country with respect to prescription drugs? What's the problem?
Well, people are depending on them too much. I mean, they're just being handed out like candy in some instances. And our eye is essentially off the target. Rather than turning to prescription drugs, why aren't we looking at diet and lifestyle? You know, why aren't we using the mantra, prevention is the cure? We should be taking care of ourselves through proper diet and proper lifestyle habits. And we're simply not, because we're so dependent on running to the doctor and getting drugs to duct tape our health problems. We should be solving these problems from the get-go.
Wow. That is so true, what you're saying about running to the doctor. And we have this mentality that for every ache, for every pain, for every sniffle, there's a drug.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was after World War II that chemicals became greater than Mother Nature, right? And so the propaganda that came out after World War II was such that if you were anti-chemical, if you, in other words, if you were anti-pesticide, anti-herbicide, anti-pharmaceutical, that you were anti-progress. And so you were ostracized by your community simply because, oh, well, all of these things are greater than Mother Nature. Therefore, if you're not in our ballpark here, then you're outside of the social circle.
Folks, when you hear it from the mainstream media, what Pam's been saying for years, and I'm going to prove that. Listen to this report. Avis Favreau, our very own from London, Ontario, Avis Favreau on CTV last night saying we have a national crisis. Here we go.
A new national plan was announced today to confront Canada's growing addiction to prescription drugs. The abuse has become so alarming, it officially hit the tipping point today, bringing together government, health officials, and police. The success or failure of this plan, though, requires a healthy dose of reality. More now from CTV's medical specialist, Avis Favreau.
They're drugs designed to ease suffering, to calm anxiety, but they've also become the roots of a national crisis, triggering addictions, thefts, overdoses, even deaths. Now, doctors, pharmacists, and police say they've designed a national plan to tame this prescription drug abuse. It's called First Do No Harm, after one of the fundamental principles of medicine.
It represents an important national milestone in addressing the opiate crisis.
Canada's become one of the world's top users of painkillers like oxycodone and fentanyl, much of it illegitimate use. The report wants to change that, with 58 recommendations, including a countrywide surveillance system to track the use of these powerful medications, prescription monitoring programs in all provinces, and strengthened warning labels. It's a plan this physician supports.
My vision, and I think the vision of all everybody who is involved in this national strategy, is to have zero overdose deaths. That's unacceptable, that people are dying because of an overdose of a prescription drug that is supposed to help them instead of killing them. I think that would be an excellent goal and achievable in a few years from now.
The report also calls for more addiction treatment programs. There currently are long waiting lists across the country.
Our government is committed to doing its part to prevent and abuse the misuse of prescription drugs.
But there have been numerous efforts to fix this problem in the past. Many never implemented, some didn't work. Josh Graves died 2 years ago after misusing OxyContin at a party. His sister, Amy, is skeptical of the new plan.
We need to actually have these professionals start making tangible change and difference. Right now, it's all talk. I really think we need to see action.
And what's to prevent it from being all just talk? Those behind the strategy say they will issue annual reports to chart progress, hoping that over the next decade, they'll see fewer overdoses
and fewer deaths. Lisa?
Such a great intention, really, Avis, but it almost seems like it's more of a shift of our culture.
It's a huge problem that they have to overcome that involves pharmaceutical agencies, doctors, pharmacists, patients, native reserves where they have almost no addiction counseling. And just to give you an idea of how many drugs are out there, this is an example. My son was prescribed some pills for a dental procedure, and he wasn't given just a few pills. We were given 20. Now, multiply that times medicine cabinets across the country, pills that aren't used, that are sitting around, that could go on the market. I mean, it's a big problem that they have to change.
It's staggering, but I guess this is a start. Avis, thanks for this tonight. Doctors say the need to inform the public about the dangers of misusing prescription drugs is greater than ever, and the numbers don't lie. On our website, we've tracked the rise in the number of deaths in Canada related to the use of painkillers. That is at ctvnews.ca.
I think they've been sitting around taking notes on this show for the last...
I think people are starting to listen. I dropped off some books at Chapters, some of my books, Addiction, The Hidden Epidemic. I was at Chapters North and Chapters South, and I dropped off books, and within 2 weeks, they were sold out. I think people are starting to catch on that we need to look at nutrition as well, because when the brain is starving, of course you're going to need something to make yourself feel better. And an addict is going to climb mountains to get a drug so that they can feel better. I shouldn't say an addict, somebody who is in a bad mood, somebody who feels lousy. They will do whatever they have to do to get a drug.
But do you have any confidence that they're on the right track here? One of the lines that I heard in that report was they're absolutely committed to more addiction treatment programs.
Oh, I mean, Andy, but listen, look at the 1800s with the opium. I mean, we haven't learned from history. This is still the same problem today. As long as people are out there selling products, making profit, pleasing their shareholders, it's going to be a tough problem to solve. There's no question about it. And as long as people feel lousy, we have this, I always talk about it on the show, this bad mood epidemic that people are feeling depressed, they're feeling fatigued, they have anxiety, they can't sleep at night. As long as people are feeling lousy, they're going to run to drugs to feel better. So I think the solution is to get people to run on all eight cylinders so that they have good brain function and good moods. And then we can see a solution to the problem. But that's not what the government is looking at. Of course, that's not what the pharmaceutical company is looking at. The universities aren't considering this. I do this work on my own. I work.
They say they have all the
people.
Stakeholders yeah. that called into a meeting. Did they call you?
No, but I bet you they have problems with their moods too, you know? Like, this bad mood epidemic is truly an epidemic, and that's the root cause of the problem, and I look at it from a nutritional standpoint.
Well, first of all, they're recognizing there is a problem, so there's a start.
That's a start. So, at least it's a start.
At least it's a start. Pam, thank you so much. What an hour it's been.
Thanks,
learned
Andy.
A lot. 11 o'clock news coming up next. We're going to switch lanes on the other side of the news. You know what it costs to park when you go to visit a friend at London Health Sciences Center or University Hospital or St. Joe's? Ouch!